to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, June 2nd. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson, joined a little bit later by Max Armstrong and his guest to talk markets, Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services. And we say welcome to June Dairy Month. My slogan for four decades for June Dairy Month has been, take a dairy cow to lunch and say thank you for all the good nutritional food provided by the dairy industry. The year thus far has not been without its surprises and interesting happenings in the markets on Wall Street as well as in the agricultural commodity group. And that was certainly the case again this past week, because two record-setting days in a row. Today, we ended with the second consecutive session of record-high closes. Gains in technology and industrial stocks today more than offset what some people call a lukewarm jobs report. Non-farm payrolls increased by 138,000 in May. That's well short of the 185,000 expected by economists. And then the prior 2 months were revised lower by 66,000 jobs from what was originally reported. Average hourly earnings rose 0.2% in May, following a similar gain in April, but the unemployment rate fell to a 16-year low of 4.3%. And despite the disappointing data, market participants still largely anticipate the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates at its June meeting on June 13 and 14, and traders expecting a 90.7% chance of a quarter point hike, according to data provided by Thomson Reuters. And trader comments at Ameriprise Financial Services in Troy, Michigan, Russell Price, senior economist, said, "It's certainly surprising. It doesn't really correlate well with virtually all the other data on the labor market that we are seeing. The modest increase, however, could raise concerns about the economy's health after gross domestic product growth slowed in the first quarter and a string of softening data this week, including reports on housing and auto sales. The economy needs to create 75,000 to 100,000 jobs per month to keep up with growth in the working age population. Job gains, though, are slowing as the labor market nears full employment." For the week, the S&P 500 was up 0.95%, up nearly a point. The Dow added a little more than 0.5%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.5% for the week. We ended the week with the Dow up 62 points today at 21,206. The S&P 500 gained 9 points, ending at 2439, and the NASDAQ composite added 59 points at 6305. Industrials were up 0.5%. Technology up a little more than 1%. They were the best performing sectors in the market today. And that tech sector has been the top performer among the major S&P sectors, with a 2017 gain of 21.2%. The tech sector led today by Broadcom, which rose more than 8% to hit an all-time high of $253.76 after the chipmaker's quarterly results beat the expectations of analysts. A couple of other notes today. Energy, the worst performing sector, down a little more than 1%, with Brent oil dropping below $50 a barrel on worries that President Trump's decision to abandon a climate pact could spark more crude drilling in the United States and worsen the global glut we're already fighting with. Also today, Lululemon Athletica jumped 11.5% after the athletic apparel maker's quarterly profit beat the estimates. The S&P 500 posted 28 new 52-week highs and 11 new lows, and about 6.3 billion shares changed hands in U.S. exchanges. That's down just slightly from the daily average over the last 20 sessions. Now, as we say, that employment number, the growth, the job growth that slowed in May is of some concern to economists because of the decline in the March and April numbers and then the number coming in at 138,000 new jobs added in the month of May. Job growth has decelerated from the 181,000 monthly average over the past 12 months as the labor market now nears full employment. And economists had forecast payrolls increasing by 185,000 jobs and the unemployment rate holding steady at 4.4%. And, of course, it came in at 4.3%. The modest payrolls gain could temper expectations of a sharp acceleration in economic growth in the second quarter after gross domestic product increased at a rather low 1.2% at the start of the year. And while consumer spending picked up in April, a second report today showed the trade deficit widening 5.2%. It's now at $47.6 billion. There was some good news in the employment report, however, according to some traders. A broad measure of unemployment, which includes people who want to work but have given up searching, and those working part-time because they cannot find full-time employment, fell 0.2 percentage point to 8.4%, and that's the lowest since November of 2007. Construction payrolls up 11,000 last month. Retail employment fell 6,100. Department store chains like JCPenney, Macy's, and Abercrombie and Fitch struggling against stiff competition from online retailers led by Amazon. Non-store retailers, including online merchants, hired only 2,900 workers last month. And there's no question, as you continue to watch the big box stores and the department store chains, the online buying is indeed a challenge to much of an increase in profits for those companies. The thing is, people are going into the big box stores like Best Buy and some of the others out there, looking at the merchandise and then going home and ordering online. I'm still bothered by the fact that most online sales do not pay state sales taxes for the states represented by the buyers that do the buying. And that's why I really don't like to shop online, because they're not supporting my schools or my police department or my fire department. But that's a two-edged sword, apparently. Now, let's look ahead to next week. There are times when I wish we did elections the way they do it in Britain, because this week, after a call for a snap election by Prime Minister Theresa May received the necessary two-thirds majority vote, Britain will hold a general election on Thursday. That likely will have an impact on how the country tackles talks on its exit from the European Union. Going to be interesting to see the outcome of that election, but they're doing it quickly. None of this 2 years of campaigning, which we have in the United States. The White House next week expected to unveil its vision for banking regulation. That could happen on Tuesday. And President Trump has vowed to do a big number on the Dodd-Frank financial reform law introduced in the wake of the financial crisis. In practice, he does not have the numbers in Congress to overturn the law. Instead, Wall Street is expecting relief for Community Bank and, importantly for them, a relaxation of stress tests and resolution planning. It's a relatively light U.S. economic calendar next week. Consumer credit figures on Wednesday. It's expected to show a smaller reading of $15.5 billion in April. And then wholesale sales and revised wholesale inventories for April are expected on Friday. Couple of company notes on Thursday. J.M. Smucker Company scheduled to release its fourth quarter results. And the company is warned now that full-year sales may fall far more than it had previously anticipated as its Folgers coffee and pet snacks businesses face pressure from rising competition and commodity costs. General Motors shareholders will vote on the future of its board on Tuesday. Activist David Einhorn, hoping to get one or all of his three board candidates elected, the founder of Greenlight Capital faces an uphill battle as investors have largely rejected his plan for the company's stock structure to separate, but he is continuing to move ahead. And that's pretty much what's going to be happening next week. As reported, it's a quieter week on earnings reports and on government reports. Oil was certainly making news this week, with some rather sharp drops because of a build in inventory. Crude today closed down more than 1%. That makes 2 weeks in a row of losses in the oil market. Brent crude futures ending the week at $49.95 a barrel, and U.S. West Texas Intermediate crude futures down 70 cents, settling at $47.66 per barrel this week. U.S. drillers this week added 11 rigs in a record stretch of 20 straight weeks of adding oil drilling rigs into the marketplace. Well, we continue to be plagued with some interesting weather conditions in the agricultural community. And Max is standing by with Greg Groh, his guest, to talk markets when we continue On the Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Greg Groh in the booth with us this weekend from Archer Financial Services. I've heard that there are crop tours going on already, something that's usually saved for the month of August. I know at least one firm that was getting their act together to fan out over Indiana and Illinois, the epicenter of the May rains, to see what has happened. That is a knowledge void right now, isn't it, Greg?
Well, I think it's a concern. We know by looking at our temperature and moisture maps that that area you just mentioned was severely impacted in May for, you know, both the abnormal or excessive rains, but also colder than normal temperatures. When you look at northwest Indiana during that period of the first 2 or 3 weeks of May, we were running 10 to 15 degrees below normal. So the implications of that are being looked at, and I think you're right. People are out looking, scouting. Emergence has been slow in a lot of these areas, and no doubt plant populations have been impacted. I think the weather over Memorial Day was better maybe than expected, a little less rain, and guys have been really running this week. But people are behind with chemical and getting things wrapped up. But this last couple of days of weather, I think, has helped things a little bit. A little heat will certainly help conditions a little bit.
The amount of replant has been huge. I've heard from several individual growers, and that's such a gut-wrenching decision. I was talking with one producer about it this week, and he said it just hurts. It's ugly to try to make that decision of where you go in, you know, tear it up, and try to put something else in there. And, of course, the development of that field is going to be so irregular within that field, its maturity and its availability to harvest in the fall.
Coming on, to, like you just mentioned, very uneven situation will develop. A lot of the replant activity you're talking about is corn that might have been seeded in mid-April or the second to third week of April, and here we are at the 1st of June now with replant activity. I think it's bigger the further south you go in Indiana and into Illinois. The northern halves of those states were mostly impacted by the cooler temperatures, but a lot of ponding, a lot of overflow, say from Lafayette south down towards the Ohio River. No doubt massive replant activity is underway there this week.
There were reports of, I think, in total 16 inches of rain or something like that. I heard that number from a couple of producers about 100 miles apart of how much rain they received in the month of May. And I've used this example in other conversations. I was flying from North Carolina into Midway Airport in Chicago and coming over southern Indiana, right at sunset one evening, the sun hit the landscape perfectly, and to see all of those ponds and lakes, it was sobering.
Yeah, it's really something, and I think, as you mentioned, people are out surveying, driving these areas right now to try to get a handle on how big of an area has been impacted. No doubt crops are off to a very good start in the western areas. Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska seeded very timely. They had better weather, warmth, better emergence. But Illinois is kind of the break point, and as you go from Illinois on to the east, things are, as you mentioned, very uneven, and there's some concern, and in the market finally kind of queued up to it. This week's crop condition report showing a good to excellent rating for corn, 5-6% below last year, calls into question the ability to make a trend line or above yields this year.
I noted, though, with interest, the report from economists at the University of Illinois suggesting that these early condition ratings reports mean very little in terms of the final yield on the United States corn crop.
And history shows us that the correlation to crop conditions right now to final yield is very weak. But we know that we're going to have an unevenness, and we're going to need some heat and better weather here in June. And maps look like we're going to get a little bit of that heat and a little better weather. But I noticed that starting this weekend, there's another maybe an inch of rain across that area coming. But I think the area will handle it a little better as long as we have some heat right now.
I looked at the drought monitor map, the most recent one out this week, and boy, you notice California's improved dramatically. It looks like Georgia's improving some. They were in bad shape. Florida still has some very intense drought areas. One thing that caught my attention, Greg, was the expansion in 1 week's time of the dry area over the Dakotas.
Again, that's kind of a talking point this week as spring wheat planting kind of gets finished up in there. They're going to need a good shot of rain, and that kind of entered into the psychology a little bit this week as you just mentioned. That map showing some dryness up there. It helped them get seeded after what had been kind of a slow, sluggish start to things, but now they're going to need a little moisture to continue things.
Barring some significant development here, and I guess we need to ponder a little bit what that could be, but barring some development, are we likely to be in a sideways trading pattern through most of this month of June?
It feels that way. You know, the beans broke down and made new yearly lows due to the large acres and the South American crop supplies. Corn, though, remains in a bit of a trading range. We kind of bang back and forth and from the high to the low of that range back and forth here the last couple of weeks. And I think that range is going to continue. It's going to be hard for the market to break out with the global supply situation the way it is right now. Unless we start talking, yields something 4-5% below trend, then we might see a little better action in the market here. But those kind of decisions or thinkings along those lines are down the road a little bit. We got to get through June and kind of see where weather goes.
Global supply is big, as you note. Everybody I talk to on a regular basis also points out that global demand is quite large and doesn't seem to be softening.
Well, that is true. And when you look at the corn situation on a global basis with a lower U.S. production this year, maybe lower China production, ending stocks or global stocks are going to actually be set for a decline over this marketing year. And so it's the one part of the picture down the road that looks pretty good is that we're consuming a lot of this global corn crop right now.
Looking ahead to various things that you're going to be watching in the weeks ahead, I guess crop condition ratings will take on certainly a greater importance as we advance through the season. When do we get to really, really paying intense attention, if you will, to the weather forecast and the way the crop is looking in the field. Beginning of July?
I think so. I think historically that's kind of the key moment as we look at second half of summer weather forecasts and so forth and what we're going to anticipate. Certainly, July is kind of a key moment for corn. August, of course, a little bit more important for soy. But I think the weather is going to be a big factor. We got to get through the acreage report at the end of the month and quarterly stocks. I do think we're probably going to see a little lower corn acres, reflective of some of the things we talked about a few minutes ago. And the percentage of harvested acres to planted acres will probably be below the last couple of years' ratio. So we're tightening up a little bit on the acreage side of corn. And we'll just now have to watch the weather and see where we go with pollination and how we develop the crop.
Acreage, that story is still moving here. It's in flux, as we were talking a little bit earlier, here in these early days of June, when that June acreage report survey is being taken. That's not going to be a definitive number, is it?
No, it won't. That's why I think the survey work that you mentioned a little bit ago is going to be very important. People getting out and trying to get a handle outside of the USDA numbers as to the true nature of how much replant activity and how much prevent plant insurance claims we might have in some of these areas that just aren't going to get back in. Enough in order to get beyond that. So,
what are the price possibilities here? If we start to see that this corn crop maybe is below trend line yield and below certainly a year ago when we had a record, what kind of price activity could we see? What do you think is the is the strongest price point that we could hit?
Well, I think the market is psychologically going to be held back by the $4 price right now. We're actually struggling to move the market beyond $3.95 here in the last couple of days of trading, with the lower crop conditions helping the market build back towards that price. $4 will be a psychological spot. Remember last spring, early summer, when we rallied, we reached up to around $4.49 in new crop corn. About a year ago or just before that. Certainly 450 will be a big resistance area given the global supply. It would take a pretty sharp drop in yield expectations for me to think we could move anything beyond that. And quite frankly, anytime we get a chance to market into that four and a quarter area this summer, I think that's going to be a very attractive price level.
Obviously, the markets have various factors that affect them, different factors between corn and beans. But if there is a corn market rally, if, I know that's a big if there is one this summer, would it help lift soybeans as well?
It would to some degree on given days, but the global supply of soybeans is not going to shrink the way that we're looking at corn over the next year. And it's going to be hard. China's crush margins have weakened dramatically. We've already heard talk that China might be actually canceling or attempting to roll forward some South American bean cargoes. So the soybean situation is set up in a very bearish way. And if those acres are there that we've heard about and we have any kind of a normal yield there, it's going to be very hard for the soybean market to create much of a major rally unless we see a real dry August. You know, that's down the road.
What else is out there other than weather, other than crop conditions, as we look at the international geopolitical scene, as we look at something that could rear its head out there? Is there anything else that you're keeping an eye on for the potential of moving markets this summer?
Well, I think it's trade right now, and there's a lot of nervousness in trade right now. We see Mexico opening inroads to try and build suppliers out of South America. Traditionally, they've been our biggest buyer of corn, and the trade rhetoric and political rhetoric of the last few months has caused them to look outside of the U.S. And these types of issues, as they move back and forth in the market, the politics of trade, whether it be in livestock or whether it be in the grain markets, are probably something we need to be very attuned to in the months ahead.
Greg, thanks for coming in. It's always good to see you and great to talk to you and to benefit from your knowledge.
Thanks, Max.
Greg Grobe with Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The world of agriculture is always concerned about weather, as we just heard in Max's visit with Greg Groh. But it goes beyond crops, because in the Department of Agriculture, the biggest agency in the department is the U.S. Forest Service. And that agency is now heading into another fire season. And so today, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke joined forces in Boise, Idaho, at the National Incident Fire Command Center. They had a tour and a briefing on the upcoming wildfire season, and then following the events, the Secretary sent a memorandum to wildland fire leadership highlighting the importance of interdepartmental collaboration in protecting communities and managing public lands. In the memorandum, both Perdue and Zinke stressed the need for working together as they anticipate the 2017 wildfire season to be another challenging year. Well, I can attest to that. It already is a challenge for parts of the country, as many of you know, because I've said here on the program, I've been in Arizona since the 1st of March, and the wildfire season is underway. As a matter of fact, this week, a major Interstate 17 that goes north out of Phoenix to the Grand Canyon was closed for about half a day because of a wildfire and smoke blowing across the roadway. And since the first of the year, Arizona alone has already had 60 wildfires that have required manpower and equipment to bring under control. And that's just Arizona. That doesn't count California and the rest of the western states that are faced with the same problem. So as we say, I guess, in the fire country, be careful. Make sure your campfire is out completely and make sure you don't toss a lighted cigarette out of your car, because it's amazing how quickly, if you have a wind, these fires will spread. So that's our word of advice if you're traveling in the western part of the country, or it doesn't have to be west. We've seen some real fires in the southeast of the country as well. So now let's look at the week's trade in the commodity world. Live cattle had a pretty good week, hitting a one-month high today thanks to fund buying and short covering. And so on Monday, we're going to start trading June live cattle at $130.82 after gaining $3.57 today. And August feeder cattle will start the week at $158.72 after gaining $2.35 a hundredweight today. Even lean hogs ended the day higher. The June lean hog contract at $81.22, a gain of 32 cents for the day. So livestock, particularly cattle, showing a little bit of life. And a lot of the cow-calf operators I talk to here in Arizona say, boy, it's about time, because they've got a good calf crop coming on and they've got pretty good pasture over much of the ranch area of Arizona. Now the grain market, different story there. Spring wheat futures today set a 5.5 month high because of expanding dryness in the Northern Plains production belt. Minneapolis Grain Exchange July spring wheat settled up 5 cents at $5.83¾ a bushel, after reaching $5.90, and that's the highest spot price we've seen since mid-January. Board of Trade wheat, however, settled mixed. Nearby contracts lifted by strength in spring wheat and soybeans rose on bargain buying after new lows set this week. Corn followed that firming trend. And so where do we start on Monday? Well, July wheat will start at $4.29¼ a bushel. July corn will start at $3.72¾ a bushel. That's after gaining a penny and a half today. And July soybeans will start the week at $9.21¼ after gaining 11¾ today. That's our time. Oh, a quick reminder. Next week on June 7, 8, and 9, World Pork Expo at the Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines. Well, that's our time. Max Armstrong and I thank you very much for joining us here on the program. And we thank the CME Group, sponsor of the markets.